6.
Now, have you got it straight? Flynn asked without conviction. The past 8 days of hunting together had given him no confidence in Sebastian's ability to carry out a simple set of instructions without introducing some remarkable variation of his own. You go down the river to the island, and you load the ivory onto the dhow. Then you come back here with all the canoes to pick up the next batch. Flynn paused to allow his words to absorb into the soggy tissue of Sebastian's head before he went on. And for Christ's sake, don't forget the gin. Right you are, old chap. With 8 days' growth of black beard and the skin peeling from the tip of his sunburned nose, Sebastian was beginning to fit the role of ivory poacher. The wide-brimmed Terai hat that Flynn had loaned him came down to his ears, and the razor edges of the elephant grass had shredded his trouser legs and stripped the polish from his boots. His wrists and the soft skin behind his ears were puffy and speckled with spots of angry red where the mosquitoes had drunk deep. But he had lost a little weight in the heat and the ceaseless walking, so now he was lean and hard-looking. They stood together under a monkey bean tree on the bank of the Rufiji, while at the water's edge the bearers were loading the last tusks into the canoes. There was a purple-greenish smell hanging over them in the steamy heat, a smell which Sebastian hardly noticed now. For the last 8 days had seen a great killing of elephant, and the stink of green ivory was as familiar to him as the smell of the sea to a mariner. By the time you get back tomorrow morning, the boys will have brought in the last of the ivory. We'll have a full dhow load, and you can set off for Zanzibar. What about you? Are you staying on here? Not bloody likely. I'll light out for my base camp in Mozambique. Wouldn't it be easier for you to come along the dhow? It's nearly 200 miles to walk. Sebastian was solicitous. In these last days, he had conceived a burning admiration for Flynn. Well, you see, it's like this. Flynn hesitated. There was no time to trouble Sebastian with talk of German gunboats waiting off the mouth of the Rufiji. I have to get back to my camp because... Suddenly inspiration came to Flynn O'Flynn. Because my poor little daughter is there all alone. You've got a daughter? Sebastian was taken by surprise. You're damn right I have. Flynn experienced a sudden rush of paternal affection and duty. And the poor little thing is there all alone. Well, when will I see you again? The thought of parting from Flynn, of being left to try and find his own way to Australia, saddened Sebastian. Well, Flynn was tactful. I hadn't really given that much thought. This was a lie. Flynn had thought about it ceaselessly for the last 8 days. He was eagerly anticipating waving farewell to Sebastian Oldsmith for all time. Couldn't we... Sebastian blushed a little under his sun-reddened cheeks. Couldn't we sort of team up together? I could work for you, sort of as an apprentice. The idea made Flynn wince. He almost panicked at the thought of Sebastian permanently trailing along behind him and discharging his rifle at random intervals. Well now, Bessie boy. He clasped a thick arm around Sebastian's shoulders. First you sail that old dhow back to Zanzibar, and old Kepi El Kep will pay you out your share. Then you write to me, eh? How about that? You write to me, and we'll work something out. Sebastian grinned happily. I'd like that, Flynn. I'd truly like that. All right, then, off you go. Don't forget the gin. With Sebastian standing in the bows of the lead canoe, the double-barreled rifle clutched in his hands, and the tepai hat pulled down firmly over his ears, the little flotilla of heavily laden canoes pulled out from the bank and caught the current. Paddles dipped and gleamed in the evening sunlight as they arrowed away towards the first bend downstream. Still standing unsteadily in the frail craft, Sebastian looked back and waved his rifle at Flynn on the bank. "For Christ's sake, be careful with that goddamn piece," Flynn bellowed, too late. The rifle fired, and the recoil toppled Sebastian, sprawling onto the pile of ivory behind him. The canoe rocked dangerously, while the paddlers struggled to keep it from capsizing and then disappeared around the bend. 12 hours later, the canoes reappeared around the same bend and headed towards the lone monkey bean tree on the bank. The canoes rowed lightly, empty of ivory, and the paddlers were singing one of the old river chants. Freshly saved, wearing a clean shirt and his other pair of boots, a case of Flynn's liquor between his knees, Sebastian peered eagerly ahead for his first glimpse of the big American. A fine blue tendril of campfire smoke smeared out across the river, but there were no figures waving a welcome from the bank. Suddenly, Sebastian frowned as he realized that the silhouette of the monkey bean tree had altered. He wrinkled his eyes, peering ahead uncertainly. Behind him rang the first cry of alarm from his boatmen, "Almond!" And the canoe swerved under him. He glanced back and saw the other canoes wheel away in tight circles aimed downstream, the boatmen jabbering in terror as they leaned forward to thrust against the paddles. His own canoe was in swift pursuit of the others as they darted beyond the bend. "Hey!" Sebastian shouted at the sweat-shiny backs of his paddlers. "What do you think you're doing?" They gave him no answer, but the muscles beneath their black skins bunched and rippled in the frantic effort to drive the canoe faster. "Stop that immediately," Sebastian yelled at them. "Take me back, dash it all. Take me to the camp." In desperation, Sebastian lifted the rifle and aimed at the nearest man. "I'm not joking," he yelled again. The native glanced over his shoulder into the gaping twin muzzles, and his face, already twisted with fear, now convulsed into a mask of terror. They all had developed a healthy reverence for the way Sebastian handled that rifle. The man stopped paddling, and one by one the others followed his example, sitting frozen under the hypnotic eyes of Sebastian's rifle. "Back," said Sebastian, and gestured eloquently upstream. Reluctantly, the man nearest him dipped his paddle, and the canoe turned broadside across the current. "Back," Sebastian repeated, and the men dipped again. Slowly, warily, the single canoe crept upstream towards the monkey bean tree and the grotesque new fruit that hung from its branches. The hull slid in onto the firm mud, and Sebastian stepped ashore. "Out," he ordered the boatmen and gestured again. He wanted them well away from the canoe, for he knew that, otherwise, the moment his back was turned, they would set off downstream again with renewed enthusiasm. "Out," and he herded them up the steep bank into Flynn O'Flynn's camp. The two bearers, who had died of gunshot wounds, lay beside the smouldering fire. But the four men in the monkey bean tree had been less fortunate. The ropes had cut deeply into the flesh of their necks, and their faces were swollen, mouths wide in the last breath that they had never been taken. On the lolling tongues, the flies crawled like metallic green bees. "Cut them down!" Sebastian roused himself from the nausea that was bubbling queasily up from his stomach. The boatmen stood paralyzed, and Sebastian felt anger now mixed with his revulsion. Roughly, he shoved one of the men towards the tree. "Cut them down," he repeated, and thrust the handle of his hunting knife into the man's hand. Sebastian turned away as the natives shinned up into the fork of the tree with the knife blade clamped between his teeth. Behind him he heard the heavy, meaty thuds as the dead men dropped from the tree. Again his stomach heaved, and he concentrated on his search of the trampled grass around the camp. "Flynn," he called softly. "Flynn, I say, Flynn, where are you?" And there were prints of hobnailed boots in the soft earth, and at one place he stooped and picked up the shiny brass cylinder of an empty cartridge case. Stamped into the metal of the base around the detonator cap were the words Mauser Fabriken, 7mm. "Flynn!" more urgently now, as the horror of it came home to him. "Flynn!" And he heard the grass rustle near him. He swung towards it, half raising the rifle. "Master!" And Sebastian felt disappointment swoop in his chest. "Mohammed? Is that you, Mohammed?" And he recognized the wizened little face, with the eternal fez perched on the woolly head as it emerged. Flynn's chief gunboy, the only one with a little English. "Mohammed," with relief, and then quickly, "Finney, where is Finney?"
"They shot him, master. The askari came in the early morning before the sun. Finney was washing. They shot him, and he fell into the water."
"Where? Show me where." Below the camp, a few yards from where the canoe was drawn up, they found the pathetic little bundle of Flynn's clothing. Beside it was a half-consumed cake of cheap soap and a metal hand mirror. There were the deep imprints of naked feet in the mud, and Mohammed stooped and broke off one of the green reeds at the water's edge. Wordlessly he handed it to Sebastian. A drop of blood had dried black on the leaf, and it crumbled as Sebastian touched it with his thumbnail. "We must find him. He might still be alive. Call the others. We'll search the banks downstream." In an agony of loss, Sebastian picked up Flynn's soiled shirt and crumpled it in his fist.